The History Today book club recommendation for August is Roger Moorhouse's Berlin at War, Life and Death in Hitler's Capital, 1939-45. And Roger's here to discuss his motivations for writing the book, about how he researched it and wrote it, and what the book is actually about. So, Roger, where did the idea of the book come from? What was the motivation then?
The idea for the book essentially came from a rather liquid lunch I had with an agent after killing Hitler, after the book Killing Hitler came out. And we were sort of lazily throwing ideas around, and it struck me there that Berlin is sort of such an iconic city in modern European history. Was something that I personally find fascinating. I know it has a tremendous resonance with the reading public as well. And I thought I would try and find an angle in the modern history of Berlin, something that hadn't been done before, that I could work into a proposal. So that was the sort of the long route of the book. Having then sort of researched the historiography of Berlin and trying to ascertain where the gaps were, of course, as historians we want a gap to work in, it struck me that, if you like, a people's history of Berlin during the war was something that was rather lacking. And added to that sort of realisation was also the fact that there's an awful lot of first-hand material that is available, both in sort of published and unpublished memoirs and diaries and so on. So it struck me that that could be a very interesting and useful avenue to pursue. It sort of ties in as well, I think, with the sort of historiographical aspect, which is that we have, in the last probably couple of decades, there's been a gradual shift across to a, if you like, a democratisation of history. It's very much the shift from the top-down view, the view from the politicians and the generals and the field marshals, down to a more popular view of, if you like, the man in the street and his view of history. So it struck me that I could also sort of pursue that line and provide, if you like, a people's history. On a sort of broader historiographical view, I also wanted to challenge the rather, I think, lazy convention by which we see ordinary Germans in Nazi Germany as a sort of homogenised mass of indoctrinated Nazis all marching in step. It never has struck me as a terribly realistic assumption to make. And I wanted to, if you like, bring out that multiplicity of opinions and multiplicity of voices, and it struck me that this model was a good way of trying to do that.
So, one of the things that's most noticeable about the book is that it has a great deal of original research there and material that really hasn't been covered before, certainly not in an English language book, as far as I'm aware. There is, it seems quite unbelievable, I suppose, to many people that there's anything more to say about Nazi Germany, such as being the amount of material that's been there ever since the regime came to an end, going all the way back to Hugh Trevor Rover and Alan Bullock and people like that. But plainly there is still a great deal more to say. And we seem to be going through something of a golden age so far as material on that period goes. How did you go about finding, sourcing that original material? Did you know where it was before? Was there stuff that you come across? What was your plan there?
Both, actually. I sort of knew a couple of places to start. I mean, you're right, there is an awful lot written about this subject and has been ever since 45. But I think partly due to that historiographical shift that I mentioned a moment ago, there are new avenues that are opening up all the time, and that in turn opens up new sources of material. So there were a couple of places that I knew about already, one of which was the German diary archive in Emmendingen in southwestern Germany, in the Black Forest. So I had to go down there and have a trawl through what they had, and that's a fantastic resource, which has not been going for long. And they basically collect up, diaries of ordinary people, things left in lofts and house clearances and so on, and they catalogue them and store them for posterity. So that was a very good start. And in addition, Berlin has a wonderful organisation which basically exists to put Berliners eyewitnesses of various events, whether it's World War II or the erection of the wall or the fall of the wall or, you know, anything to do with the Stasi, anything in modern Berlin's history, to put eyewitnesses of those events in touch with historians, documentary filmmakers or whoever. And I got in touch with them and basically submitted a list of requests, and they came back with a list of names and phone numbers of people who would be happy to speak on whatever subject it was. So that was the first avenue of approach. In addition, I had a very lucky meeting with a historian in Berlin who had put out a call some years before via the Berlin press for first-hand accounts of the bombing war on Berlin. And he very kindly gave me his database of names and addresses, which I then went through as well. So I ended up, having sort of weeded out those that I thought weren't terribly useful, I ended up with about 40 or so Berliners of that generation with whom I then did interviews. So I actually had far too much first-hand material than I could really sensibly use. But it's better that way than the other.
And how did you select the material that went in the book? What were you looking for?
I was looking, first of all, for patterns. I mean, the difficult thing, I suppose, with oral history is that there's a whole, you know, the difficulty of what people remember and judging the accuracy of it, the validity of it. That's a problem for the historian. It's something you just have to be sort of alive to and hopefully have your antennae tuned towards. But secondary, I was looking also for patterns. So if you had the same or a similar experience from a couple of eyewitnesses, then that to me was, you know, if you like, as close to corroboration as you could really get. So I was looking for patterns of experience across those accounts. And also anything that just sort of stood out, a sort of different opinion. Again, but it had to be plausible. I mean, a few of them, I think, were suffering from the ravages of age. But it was actually a fascinating experience, I have to say, as a historian, to sit down with these people in, you know, elegant West Berlin apartments and have coffee and cake and listen to the most hair-raising stories. It was a fascinating experience.
And what were the major discoveries there? When you talk about patterns, were their experiences, their memories quite similar? Was the approach to their attitude towards the war, was there any divergence there in opinion that people had, or was there a general consensus about the regime, about what happened to them, about what they experienced?
There's a degree of consensus, and primarily I think you have to understand that the people that come forward and volunteer for that sort of interview are in a sense self-selecting. So there is, you know, I mean, your purist would say that it's slightly biased group, but that's unfortunately unavoidable. So there is a consensus that, you know, very few of them had, I mean, they were all of a certain age, so they were sort of teenagers, early 20s at most at the end of the war, so they're all fairly young. So their view on the sort of raw politics perhaps is slightly lacking because of their age, but in many ways, their experiences of the war, and particularly of the end of the war, were very, very similar. And that rather, you know, in terms of the depredations of the Red Army coming into Berlin, and the depredations of their own side, putting 11-year-old boys into Volkssturm units, for example. So those sort of accounts were very, very consistent.
And once you've got this material together, this vast amount of original material, how did you then structure the book? Did that have a bearing on how it was structured? Did you have an idea of the structure of the book before that was done? And how did the sort of collation of all that material affect the structure of the book?
I had initially thought that I could be more or less chronological with the book, but then realised fairly early on in the writing phase that wasn't going to be realistic. And the problem that sort of, you know, the formula that occurred to me was, well, how do you write, you know, the history of a city of 5 million people over 6 years of warfare? There are just too many voices to try and incorporate. So I had a sort of a rethink in terms of the structure. And it is broadly chronological, but within that chronological arc, it's thematic. And that seemed to me the most sensible way of bringing that material together in a sort of coherent form so that you can discuss whether it's the attitude towards propaganda or the attitude to the Gestapo or the attitude to the Holocaust. You can discuss those aspects within those sort of self-contained chapters, but it still has the, you know, the arc, the chronological arc of the whole. So it is sort of necessarily pointilliste in its approach, but I think I've been told that it does work quite well on both levels, both thematically and chronologically.
It's been very well received critically, and one of the things that a lot of people have commented upon is about how human it is, how moving are the stories of those people. I wonder if there was any sort of particular episode that you deal with in the book that you found particularly moving or insightful.
There are many, actually, and as I say, the experience of sitting and listening to some of those stories was profoundly moving in many cases. And there are many scenes there that will sort of live long in my memory. I think the end of the war is the sort of astonishing murderous chaos of the end of the war in Berlin is probably the most sort of most poignant, if you like. I mean, after all, everything that the Germans had done in the East, that they then have this absolute whirlwind of revenge visited upon them. In many cases, it's certainly not undeserved, but it's still absolutely brutal. And the experience of ordinary, often child soldiers, the experience of seeing the first Soviet soldiers and the experience of civilians, again, when the door is battered down and they see their first Soviet soldier, those moments where you have that absolute sort of horror of what's happening next, that when those were communicated to me, that was really quite astonishing. So I did hear some absolutely hair-raising stories, and as I say, a lot of them will stay with me.
Well, thank you, Roger. Berlin at War, Life and Death in Hitler's Capital, 1939 to 1945, by Roger Moorhouse, is available in paperback, and it's August's History Today Book Club recommendation. Thank you.